Welcome to America's Jobs Team. At Consultant Connect, we believe the greatest force for change is a job, but it requires amazing, talented economic developers. Each week, we will go deep with America's jobs heroes on their leadership journeys, with the belief that when leaders get stronger, their communities thrive.
Hey, I'm so excited today. We have Jeff Finkel, who's the president and CEO of the International Economic Development Council, IEDC. Jeff is not only a great friend and been a friend for a very, very long time. Jeff is a voice for economic development all over the world. You know, following the merger of the Council of Urban Economic Development, QED, and the American Economic Development Council 15 years ago, you know, Jeff has really set the course over the last 30 plus years for economic development on a national level. And as you'll hear on this podcast, has grown his organization from a handful of employees and less than $1 million to an annual budget to, you know, closer to $6 million and 30 employees. And if you've ever been to an IEDC event, you know that Jeff is everywhere. And I know you'll enjoy today's podcast. Come along with us and hear Jeff Finkel. Hey, everyone. Welcome to America's Jobs Team. We're so excited to be here today. And I've got Jeff Finkel joining us. Jeff, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
So we're going to dive right into questions. So what's the biggest challenge facing leaders today?
Well, I think there are two or three challenges that are facing our industry. And, you know, the first issue, and I'm not sure exactly who has to address this, the baby boom generation is starting to depart many of these senior economic development jobs. Some names that many of us know, Rick Weddle, who has led many organizations, is about ready to step down. Mike Langley in Minneapolis is getting ready to step down. Ronnie Bryant in Charlotte is stepping down. And so we're going to have a number of these senior level jobs starting to open up. That's going to provide a lot of opportunities for people that are either in smaller organizations or number twos. But it's also going to create some small instability in that many of these people who take these jobs may not be ready for these bigger communities and maybe many of the issues that need to be addressed. The second, and IEDC is currently working on a report, as you know, Ron, on our profession is a target for some people, and we're being attacked in some places. And how we respond to those challenges is important. Not everybody is going to be all that excited about all the money that was thrown at Amazon or Foxconn in Wisconsin. And we're going to have to defend professionally this big game hunting and the incentives that go around that. This in Florida, there's been a variety of attacks on the profession, the size of some of our salaries, the whole issue of are we picking winners and losers. IEDC is preparing some of those tools to help people with, but every day we have to defend what we do to our own city councils, our chambers of commerce, our state legislatures. And this is going to be an ongoing leadership responsibility. We have to train our city councils. One of the top issues that our members tell us is they are having trouble with elected officials who do not seem to understand what they do. And then finally, whether we like it or not, once you have an employee, you know, we need to be able to deal with the HR dilemmas that come up in day-to-day management. Many of our members are great at closing deals. They're great at talking to site selectors. They're great at talking to company executives. They can underwrite good economic development loans, but some of the simple stuff of blocking and tackling around HR drive them crazy. They prefer not to do it, but frankly, if they want to be good leaders, they have to understand that.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, I think what you said, and you wouldn't do a commercial for yourself, but IEDC does two really important things. A knowledge transfer whether that's through EDRP or that's hearing speakers present at the various conferences. And then the other thing is establish a national criteria for what it means to be a professional economic developer. And I think whether it's the personal certification or the organizational certification, those are things that, you know, I encourage every young economic developer and group that we talk to, work with, is you got to get involved in those. That's the armor you need to go to battle every day to do your job. That knowledge is power. Ignorance is our enemy. And so I think IEDC does a great job of helping all of us be prepared for the challenges in the future. You know, sometimes we're just too busy to see the challenges ourselves. And you and the board do a great job of identifying that and giving us real information. The EDRP reports are outstanding. And so I encourage people to both read them, but if your budget allows, to get involved in it. So what's the one characteristic you believe every leader should possess? And then who do you think is an example of that?
So we actually have, we've done two surveys on what are those skill sets that are necessary for strong economic development leaders. And both of those are in our bookstore. We did two different surveys. One was done by the headhunting firm DHR, and the other one was done by a human resource firm out of St. Louis. And I would encourage anybody who's listening to this to go online. One of them's probably free. You may have to pay for the other. But let me separate, you know, kind of regular leadership from what I see the exceptional leader. And the exceptional leader, I refer to them as entrepreneurial leaders. And in my career, there are a number of them that stand out, that they not only understand what their job is every day, they have some unique sets of entrepreneurship skills that allow them to grow organizations, take on responsibilities maybe beyond what you would expect that they would be dealing with on a day-to-day basis. They are oftentimes mavericks, but people stop and listen to them. And I'll give you one example, and I'm not going to deal with anybody that's currently in the profession because I'm just going to, you know, somebody's going to say, well, why didn't they talk about me? There's a guy named Jim Reed. Jim's in his 80s now. He's still working, and he runs Momentum Dallas now. After he effectively retired, he started to help veteran entrepreneurs. How do you get veterans to start to create businesses? But Jim is a freaking wild man. He was assistant city manager in Dallas. He ran the Southern Dallas Development Corporation. He's a white guy in a mostly African-American community when he was working in South Dallas, and he got things done. Texas Instruments, for instance, gave him $1 million just because. And it was just because he was smart enough to ask. His whole career, he'd been a leader, but he wasn't a regular leader. There was no regular method to his madness, but his madness allowed him to get a ton done in South Dallas. I refer to people like him, and I know 50 of these people, and they have some entrepreneurship skills that are beyond that. They understand economic development. They know how to do their strategic plan. It's far beyond.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. I think that is a great way of defining it. You know, one of the things that, you know, in your role, so you're not only, you know, got this, you know, global organization to run, but you're a mentor to a lot of us out there. Let's talk about derailing. What is the one behavior trait that you see derails people's careers? Because that's the thing that breaks my heart is I see amazing leaders that, you know, are in their late 20s or 30s, and then they disappear from our profession. And some of that's because they're going to go do other things, but some of it's because they have behaviors that derail those things. What's that behavior or behaviors? And then how do we guard against it?
So there are two things. There's probably 100 others, but the two things that I see, maybe three, let me change it. One, there are those things that will kill anybody in any profession. sexual harassment, stealing money, running up expenses that probably shouldn't be paid for the business. And we probably don't want to defend any of those practices. So if they lose their jobs based on that, they're going to lose their jobs wherever they are. Second, there's a lot of organizational flaws that many people can make, but if they can't meet their budgets, either they don't raise enough money or they spend too much money, that tends to be a deal killer for a lot of organizations because the boards don't want to worry about, particularly on the public-private partnership side, that the organization is going south financially. You may not be able to close as many deals, but if you also don't close as many deals and you have a financial catastrophe on your way, somebody's probably on their way out of a job. But the one thing, even if you are able to meet budget and you are having reasonable results, I refer to my Cool Hand Luke movie.
Failure to communicate.
What we have here is a failure to communicate. And I will tell you, if I have more people, I have more conversations with economic developers that are in trouble with their board, or they're in trouble with the city council, or they're in trouble and they're competent people, but they are not sharing enough of what they're doing and why they continue to need support from the private sector or from the public sector. They don't share enough. And I'm not saying, you know, give them the names of companies they may be talking to, but talk about your wins, talk about your losses, talk about what's going well for the organization, but also tell them if the community has an Achilles heel, what are those? So maybe collectively people can work on it. You know, as a young CEO of this organization, I was afraid to take bad news to my board. Once you get some maturity, you realize you can actually share bad news in a way that does not make you look incompetent. And once you can figure those things out, and then also share wins and losses with the community at large, in a way, I think you come out stronger.
Yeah, I think we refer to that as curating the good news. Doesn't mean you take credit for it, but you're curating and sharing news, good and bad. And by being honest with the bad and by lifting up others with the good, that's where you get the credibility for that communications, that kind of honest truth teller role.
Well, and I've had to actually tell people, put out a newsletter, put out something quarterly, monthly, weekly, whatever seems to tell people what's going on. You can't expect that they're going to guess what you're doing. And if they're guessing, they're probably guessing the worst.
That's right. Yep. Well, let's jump to, you mentioned changing faces in our business and retirements. But a question you must get regularly, I know I get it, is how do you know when it's time to change jobs? What advice would you give to economic developers out there who are just trying to figure it out?
That's a good question. And you're asking the wrong guy on this. I've been in this job for 32 years. And as you probably aware, on my 25th anniversary here, the board actually created an award for economic developers who have been in the same job for 15 years. And there are two or three types of people in our profession. There are people that have done well by moving from one job to another. I call them, to a certain degree, itinerant economic developers. But there are also a great number of people that have been able to stay in the same community at the same job and have done well as well. Is there a time to leave? There probably is. I mean, let's go back to Rick Weddle. I can plot Rick's career. You know, he started out in Oklahoma. He wanted to make more money, so he made a move. He ended up in Stockton, California at one point. He wanted to make more money. He ended up in Toledo at the Regional Growth Partnership. He wanted to make more money. He ended up at Greater Phoenix Economic Council. He wanted to make more money. He ended up at the Research Triangle Park and then ended up in Orlando and then finishes his career in Hampton Roads. So they're like an IBM salesperson. Rick determined that the way to success, financial success in our business, was to move. I think there are some economic developers that may well wear out their welcome in some communities, and that, and so they do make moves. But I also go back to the scenario that I think if you reinvent yourself, if you keep working with local leadership, there's the ability to sustain that job over time as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think for me, my advice is always, are there opportunities to move down the road professionally in new challenges in the role you're in? Or are you stuck in a cul-de-sac? If you're outgrowing the role and there's no opportunity to expand it, that's the time to look. But if you're just chasing the next greener pasture, I think you're going to find that there's reason the grass is always greener is because that's where the fertilizer is and isn't necessarily going to enable you to thrive as a leader.
I've had to address that question in my own mind and my own career. Could I make my employment, my organization more vibrant over time? And I was very fortunate. When I arrived a long time ago, you know, I had 8 employees and a less than a $900,000 budget. You know, we grew it. We merged with AEDC. We're now nearly 30 people, $6 million, financially solid. Both organizations couldn't claim that at various times. And so I really never felt like I had time to actually look for a job, let alone to actually think about leaving.
Yep.
I'm stubborn. When things got hard, I worked harder. And I was able to help reinvent this place 2 or 3 different times.
Yep. I think you're back to that entrepreneurial leader that we discussed early on, somebody who is going to find a way to succeed and then immediately is going to find a way to reinvent it because they know that change is coming. So you've had a great career and you're not at the end of it. But thus far, what are you most proud of in your career?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, sometime I'm going to leave. And the one thing that I think I will come back and haunt my successor is if he or she screw up the financial viability of this organization. Because one of the reasons we're able to do some of the better things that we do these days, that we are on very strong financial footing. And, you know, it's not all about money. It's also about thought leadership. So I think that's where I would come back from the grave, in fact, to haunt somebody. I think the other thing that, if I'm honest with myself, is the work we do after disasters hit. And I think Katrina hit in 2005. And the organization did not have a strategy for how to help our members when something like that happened. I'm not going to suggest we're a world leader in that at this point, but we are awfully important to a lot of places early on after these disasters hit. We are now working and we're still working in Florida. We've got a team down in the Virgin Islands today. We are working in Puerto Rico. We'll be working in North Carolina, working in Texas. The typhoon that hit the Northern Marianas Islands, we're going to be working there. The volcano in Hawaii, we're working there or will be working there. And a fair amount of the approaches are similar. Each situation is different. We have deployed hundreds of economic developers who do this for free. I mean, we're able to come up with money with the help of the Economic Development Administration, Southwest Airlines, and in the future, hopefully others. We're able to get people's expenses covered, but they go and we're doing a lot of things to help people heal help them think about the future, how not to reinvent the problems of the past. And if this organization continues doing that in the future, I think that would be a great legacy of what we started in 2005.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I know I went down, I was in Mississippi after Katrina and worked with small business people. And two of the businesses that we helped put back on their feet, figure out a business plan, figure out how they continued, are still in operation. And I still talk to both leaders, every 6 or 8 months. And that would not have happened without a national body that can mobilize people and give you a place to plug in. Because if I had to figure out, okay, where am I going to go and what I'm going to do, I just wouldn't do it. None of us will. You know, we absolutely need IADC. And we need that person who can say, hey, it's your time. You know, you've got the benefits of this and it's your time to go serve. And I think it's pretty important.
It allows people to either pay it forward or pay it back. If I have to look for volunteers today, I know people in New Orleans and Mississippi are ready to jump. I know people in Texas after their most recent hurricane, if they got help, they're ready to help. And there are places that know that they may never get hit, or if they do, they want to pay it forward. So it's awesome. It's very great to see our members willing to help.
Yeah, no, I think so too. So my most important job to do on this podcast is to say thank you. So I live by the belief that the greatest force for change is a job, but that only happens with amazing economic developers. And as much as I love economic developers, you know, I love you for your leadership and for making sure that we all have a place to fit in, plug in, and get better every day. Jeff Finkel, thanks for being my friend, and thanks for joining us on America's Jobs Team.
Thank you ever so much. I appreciate being on your inaugural kickoff to this program.
Next week, we'll be talking with Chris Shastok, the first vice president of CBRE. Chris has over 12 years' experience in aligning location decisions and business strategies, representing clients, corporate headquarters, manufacturers. Tune in next Wednesday to hear his journey. And one of my favorite things is Chris's grandparents in Kalamazoo, Michigan, close to my heart. I know you'll enjoy hearing from Chris. Thanks for being with us. We'll talk to you next week.